Hey, this is Joe Perry. You listen to Focus on Metal.
Hey, Metalheads, Scott here.
And Richie.
And as promised on this week's episode, you are going to hear an interview with a young dude called Drew Cagle. Midwest, I think, right?
Believe so.
Yeah. It was cool. You know, I'd never heard of this guy before. Richie dropped this into our Dropbox after he interviewed him. And it was kind of a, okay, you know, what are we going to be, you know, dealing with here? And then just to hear, like, influences and like what really get him jazzed and who he's played with and all of that. It was like this kid has got something that he's definitely is this up and coming guy that I think he'll do well.
The age thing for me when it comes to interviews now, and I've said this to you before, Scott, I sometimes find that young musicians are definitely more difficult to interview.
Yeah.
Because they have a certain fixation on what you're going to ask them.
Uh-huh.
They have an expectation of what you're going to ask.
Yeah.
If you go off that at all,
yeah,
and it's happened. I've had one or two PR people.
Yeah,
you know, what the fuck did you ask them? Why did you ask them that? And then I'd send the PR person the interview, and they'd listen to it, and they'd get back to me saying, "There's actually nothing there." Right, but yeah. Some of these guys, they just have all they want to talk about is their song on their album.
Yeah.
And you can't ask them anything about their person.
Yeah. And this guy, right? Like, that was at least what? At least, I want to say maybe three times in the interview, you've asked him stuff where you asked him, he said maybe the first two words in the answer stopped and was like, wow, nobody's ever asked me that. Or,
and
wow,
I
that's a really good question.
I did not know until close to the end of the interview that he was only 23.
Yeah, yeah.
And I actually never got that impression when I was talking to him, that he was that young.
Yeah.
Because his influences, his knowledge on music.
Yeah.
He seemed to be pretty knowledgeable. I'd heard the song that he'd done, and it definitely had this, you know, classic rock feel.
Yeah. When you asked him about influences, and I mean, even that was, he was kind of like, wow. And, you know, the first couple of things he said, it was kind of like, okay, I can see that. Oh, I can see that. And then all of a sudden, it's almost like he took this big gulp and then went down Elton John, Billy Joel, like all the singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
And then qualified that as well, which kind of lent another bit of maturity, because I definitely think that some younger musicians in that same position would have, like, been like, oh, you know what? It won't be cool if I mention that. But it seemed like he was very forthcoming and honest. And it didn't, he was kind of like, I am who I am.
He's confident.
Yeah.
He says it himself.
He does say
it.
Yeah, he does say it. But yeah, great. I think he is a great open up and comer. And I think we're going to probably need those, because we have people that are unceremoniously retiring on us.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. And the minute I heard the news that Aerosmith were no longer a going entity, first person I thought about was you, because you had tickets to the New Year's Eve show. And for people who don't know, we're a Massachusetts-based show.
Yep.
And you've been into Aerosmith since 74, I'm going to guess, 75?
Yeah.
Really early?
Yeah.
Unlike me, who didn't get really into Aerosmith until Parent Vacation.
Yeah, I mean, I've been because Blue I'm Army younger, forever.
Yeah, but I was 15 or 16 when Parent Vacation came out, and they were only really getting back together. So
yeah,
all and, that and era I mean, before is, then I mean, was,
it's, to
I
me,
really
it was
know.
It's baked into me, because you figure, like, well, Joe Perry's grandparents, they lived off Andover Street.
Yeah, in down here, yeah.
And one of the, I think the third show they played as a band was just around the corner from your house too. I mean, this is, you know, a long time. They've just been in the area, and always sometimes you, you end up catching them on like 93. One of them might be in a restaurant or whatever because they're going on their way up to Sunapee or whatever. And yeah, I've just always been an Aerosmith guy forever. And for me too, it was, I really wanted Nick, like Nick's never seen him.
I'd never seen him.
And it was like, great. So I can finally, she'll get to see like that one last time. That'll be good. And so I was even just disappointed that like now she'll never get to see them because she really wanted to.
They're the biggest band that I'm a fan of that I've never seen.
Wow.
They played in Dublin in, I think it was 91 or 90, and Skid Row opened. And I didn't go. I think I was still living in Waterford at the time, so it was a lot harder to get up and down to the shows. And then after that, I don't think they really played Ireland that often.
Yeah.
And they played here a few times, and it was either I'll see them the next time, or there was another gig on around the same time, and I had to go either or. And I'm like, I'd rather see Maiden, or I'd rather see, you know, some other band, Aerosmith.
Yeah, I mean, there's been tours where I've seen him in multiple dates in the area. I mean, there was the one that they did at Xfinity where they shot the scenes that they did in Get Shorty 2. And I took my oldest daughter to that show. And then a few months later, we went and saw them in the garden. I took all the kids to that one. And yeah, I mean, that's like not unusual for me to have done to do that. And I'm pretty much huge Joe Perry. But that's the thing.
I'd compare an Aerosmith show in this area like a U2 show in Dublin.
Yeah.
You know, there's something special about when a band from your area plays a hometown show.
Yep.
And I'm sure the Aerosmith guys, this show here was always special.
Yeah.
And now there's no more shows. How many shows had they left?
The bulk of the tour still. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can't be shocked, though, that this happened. Like, what's Tyler? Not, Tyler's in his mid-70s now, isn't he?
I'm not entirely shocked. I'm disappointed. And obviously, I know, everybody's been saying, you know, giving them praise and everything else. And I guess in a way it's deserved. But I have heard, I don't have this like on, you know, for imprint certain heard, but that essentially Tyler did not comply with anything that they told him to do to take care of his voice.
Are you talking the last year or are you talking for years?
After he had his vocal issues and they had to cancel it the fucking first time.
Okay.
He was given a regimen of what to do and what not to do. And basically what I heard, it was Steven Tyler being Steven Tyler, went, fuck that, I'll do what I want.
Because I know better.
Yeah.
And now we can't sing
it. And here we are. Now, could that information that I've heard be wrong? It's possible. And they're certainly not going to go, at least right now, air dirty laundry about it. But yeah, that's what I've heard.
I wonder how Joey Kramer feels. I didn't ever think of Joey when this happened.
Oh, I did the first time.
No, I know we did because we talked about it, but it's all been on Aerosmith are retiring now. And, you know, it's kind of similar to Black Sabbath with no Bill Ward.
Yeah.
You know, that Sabbath went out on their last tour and a lot, some people might say, well, it wasn't Sabbath, didn't that Bill Ward? And,
right.
You know, and Joey Kramer hasn't said a word, has he?
And he won't.
Yeah.
He won't. And now it could also be that legally he can't, but he's a good guy, and I don't think he will. But it's I was extremely, extremely disappointed. It was also like, now it's like 2 years in a row where we had hotel reservations and everything, make the whole night. Actually, my buddy Jeff was going to go down too, so we had all of that set. So we had a group of us and everything. So 2 years in a row, this gets harpooned, and then even worse now. There, it's a definite. Not like, we'll do it later. It's, we're done. Which, it sucks.
You get your refund and they keep the fees. Take a master. Ticket bastard, yeah.
I still haven't seen the refund come back yet, but, yeah. That'll be slow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the other thing too is, and I don't know why they did it the way they did it, but they say that they've retired from touring. Sorry, I don't see another album coming out. Why don't you just say
one show?
You're done. Like,
no, yep. Come on,
because that was their thing. First, they retired from touring.
First of all, no band says they're done. And second of all, if they say they're done, I don't fucking believe them anyway.
I still don't think there's... I don't think you're going to have another album come out. I just don't.
Of course you're not. Where's the interest in a new Aerosmith record?
So just say you're done.
When was Music from Another Dimension?
Oh,
at least a decade ago, right?
Yeah, I was still married.
Half of it is okay and half it's shit.
You know, and it's... Yeah, I just... I think that they could have easily just gone, yeah, okay, we're not doing it anymore. Like Zeppelin did, right? Which was basically, we can't continue the way that we are. And so just say that and call it a day. Did Zeppelin still continue to sell albums? Yes. Do they still continue to maintain their legacy? Yeah, they did. But just be like, set the expectation and that's it.
Can you imagine the people that, I don't know where the show was, it could have been bumfuck US, that could say now that they were at the last Aerosmith show.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know where it was.
Yeah.
It could have been in Idaho. It could have been.
And it sure as fuck wasn't in Boston.
Yeah.
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 But which even that boggles my mind, because the New Year's Eve show was not the final show.
No, I know that. You told me.
Yeah, which also, it was like, why didn't you have your final show where you started? But they didn't. Now, it was great that they planned things around that. And I know what it is. Home for the holidays with their families. Great. We'll do this hometown show over the holidays. A couple more days off. And then they go back on the tour. But why wouldn't you just freaking end it in Boston? Even Kiss, quote unquote, ended it at Madison Square Garden. They ended it where they started, right? In New York City. I guess it doesn't matter because they can't do it anyways.
So they can't even play a show to finish it.
Yeah.
That's basically what they're saying.
Yeah.
He can't sing.
Yeah.
He just can't.
Yeah. That's what they're saying.
Wow. I think there's more to it than that.
They should have just Miles Kennedy years ago when there was.
when he was doing American Idol?
You know? No, he was along in his career further than that.
No, I think Tyler was on American Idol.
Oh, I don't follow any of that crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
when he was working on Brand Tyler, that was the quote.
Didn't he have his country album out at the time?
Yes, he did. He had his country album.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. What the fuck?
So yeah. I'm sorry.
Yep, my boys are done.
But you never know. So what do you think?
I don't. And even
what do you think the other guys are going to do? Is Perry's going to do the thing with Alice Cooper and Johnny Depp, right?
Yeah, well, he's been doing that right along. He'll probably still do some Joe Perry project stuff.
You think Brad Whitford will do something? He did some Whitford St. Holmes recently.
He's done
recently,
some Whitford,
you know,
St. Holmes stuff. He's dabbled in investment stuff. And same with Tom. So
Tom doesn't play with anyone, though, really.
No, he doesn't.
Except for Tin Lizzy.
But he's done the you know, also investing in other businesses and stuff, too. So I think they're fine.
How many of them live up here? Any of them? I know Brad's in Nashville, isn't he?
Yeah, Brad is down. Is he in Nashville or South Carolina? He's mainly down south. As far as I know, Tom is still on the Cape.
He probably has multiple houses, though.
Tyler is... When last I knew, he still had a house in Duxbury and then another house somewhere else. Joe's got the two as well, so he's in the area. I'm not really sure where Joey is right now.
I think Steven Tyler is dating some girl that's half his age.
Yeah. Yeah, he's probably trying to be in competition with Bill Belichick.
Well, is she a cheerleader, too?
My joke there was, yeah, Bill's finally going to know what it feels like to get traded.
That's fucked up.
That'd be my, that's my one sports joke from a total non-sports fan. I'm not 100% surprised. And they are definitely going, getting up there. You know,
they're up there.
The last Joe Perry Project show.
We have to stop with this getting up there now with these guys. They're up there.
Yeah.
If you're in your mid-70s, you're fucking up there.
Yeah. The last Joe Perry Project show, it was great. I'm glad I went. But there were times where he was fucking up on songs. And granted, when you've got, the dynamo of Gary up there singing, it kind of amplifies if you fuck something up too, you know? But it was like, I started to feel bad with a couple of things that he kind of did up there.
And noticeable things or something?
It was noticeable to me.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, because he's kind of like, that guy's like my goddamn idol, you know? And
I always got the impression, and you can tell me if I'm way off base here because you're a bigger Aerosmith fan than me, that Joe Perry always came across to me as being more pure when it came to in it for the music, and that was the driving force, where with Steven Tyler, the music gave him the ticket to write everything else. With Joe, it was always about the songs and the sound, and I want to record this way, and we should fuck all the ballads and the videos and all that shit. I have a vision.
The rest of them were all pretty much like that.
And Steven was just, I can see big stars
Steven
here.
Steven was all about and is still all about Steven.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you hear in interviews over the years, especially with Joe, less so with Brad and Tom, because I don't get interviewed as much, that when they talk about previous albums with Joe, he'd always want to start with a vision of the album sounding like the early Aerosmith stuff.
Yeah.
And then all these people would start pulling him away from that.
Yeah.
Be it the label, be it John Kolodner, be it Steven.
That's what I was going to say, is all of a sudden you've got the label and Kolodner and Tyler together. Yeah. And it's like, fuck.
It's like, okay, we'll give you your two or three songs that sound like classic Aerosmith, Joe, but you got to play Diane Warren songs and you got to do the ballads. And
yeah.
We'll give you your bone.
Yeah.
But you got to do the rest of it. Whereas he'd rather do 10 songs like the two or three that he wanted.
Yeah.
Because when you look at music from, especially when you look at the last record, Music from Another Dimension, you can easily fucking tell the Perry stuff.
Yeah.
To the rest of the stuff, because it, you know, the rest of the stuff is all this fucking piano-driven ballad bullshit. Whereas with Joe Perry songs on it, it's like old school rock. It's like Dumb, a little bit like Dumb with Mirrors. I'm not saying it's like rocks, because you're never going to catch that in a bottle ever again.
No, that album's incredible.
The raw sounding stuff on Music from Another Dimension, you know, it's not being driven by Tyler. It's been driven by Joe Perry.
Yeah.
And I think that's what he wants. That's what most of the fans want. And at this stage, you're just not going to get
that. Well, there's a good chunk that do. I mean, but there's still, you know, it's a very similar thing, I guess, in a way, the parallel of the Roth era and the Hagar era, right? So because you definitely do have people that came in from Permanent Vacation on, that to them, that's Aerosmith. Then you have people that, like me, that came in early on with Rocks and Wings and like, to me, when I think Aerosmith, I think those songs, and you see that in shows too, where there are definitely people that are more excited about those songs that are permanent and on than our early stuff. And then you have the opposite.
I am the Permanent Vacation on.
Yeah,
because that's when I came into the band, and I'm not saying they're their best albums, because they're not, because some of their earlier stuff is better. In my opinion, the albums are better.
Right.
But I have the emotional attachment from when I came in.
Right. But so, it's also, I think it goes back to the video effect. So there's a lot of people that like certain songs because they only even really got on to Aerosmith when they got themselves cleaned up, came back, and they were making these videos as well. And that's kind of the Aerosmith that everybody has in their mind. and not the older Blue Army Aerosmith.
Yeah, yeah. Over the years, I've been the guy, and even back then, when people were jumping up and down about Appetite for Destruction in 87, and I was getting into Permanent Vacation and listened to earlier Aerosmith, I was jumping up and down saying, what about this fucking band?
Yeah.
And I know Permanent Vacation sold millions, but it didn't do fucking 20 million like Appetite. And then, of course, they did Pump. I think Pump's a fantastic record.
Yeah.
Right? Top to bottom, absolutely fantastic.
That's a good album, yeah.
Right? But again, there was a push-pull. You could see it with Perry and Tyler and Kolodner. And I think there's a video, they're making a Pump video.
I have it
there.
Over there.
Yeah. And you have Kolodner coming in saying, love that. No, that's terrible.
You get video of young Mike Frazier in that
video.
They're
fighting with each other in it. And because they want the album to sound like this and Kolodner wants it to sound like that. And but, you know, for all intents and purposes, though, as a studio entity, I think that band has been done for a while. It wouldn't really interest me if they brought out new music. I don't know how much unreleased stuff is out there, because that Pandora's Box, the box set, is fabulous.
Yeah.
Because that's got a lot of early stuff on it.
It does. Yeah. And it's got a lot of jam stuff and things like that. And
And they had the Get a Grip album that came out in 93 had like five or six non-studio, non-album tracks on the B-side. So there's been a lot of, extra stuff that's out there. I don't know what they have left. Do they have a lot of live material left? I don't know. You'd know more than I
would.
Yeah,
and there's stuff in the other, that red box in the first chunk there too, that
Box of
big
Fire
collection. No, it's the new, they put it out last year.
Oh.
And so there's stuff in there too. But then you have to deal with the fact that you've got stuff on Columbia, stuff on Geffen. It's, all
labels.
Of that too. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just wondering how much newer studio tracks are out there from their MTV era on. Because there's probably not that much from their 70s era, because I'd say it's probably nearly all been released at this stage.
I would. Well, they had a faster schedule with the 70s, so that would make a difference. But anything that is of the latter period, if there is stuff, it's probably not completed. It's like, nope, we've got these 15. Nope, we're going to take those 12. We stop work on those type of thing.
I think the band were so fucked up as well that they just, if you're going to do 9 songs, do the 9 of them and get the fuck out of here.
Well, I would say that for Draw the Line and for Night in the Ruts, that would absolutely be the case.
Yeah.
When you get to Rock in a Hard Place, you got Tyler that's so fucked up he can't even write lyrics anymore. So you might have some music and no words to go with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just curious, are they going to be one of these bands now that go back to the well, start re-releasing everything and putting all this bonus material on it? Because I'm not sure, and you can correct me, but when they've reissued all their classic albums, there's hardly ever bonus material on them.
Correct.
They've only ever remastered them.
Yep.
There's no extra tracks.
Correct.
So either there's nothing or they're waiting. And the waiting's over.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, part of that is the change in record companies, what's there. Shit gets lost. I mean, we've heard this from other bands too, like
The Fire, that universe, was it that Fire with all the bands masters?
We also talked to somebody else recently too about, I think it was when you talked to Jerry.
Jerry Best.
He asked about the masters.
Yeah.
And it was like, we still don't know where they are. We had a lead. Somebody said, so you've got that kind of thing too of like, well, where is this stuff? Do they still have shit that's sitting at the record plant that Jack did, or, what's going on? And you get stuff that gets lost, or you get stuff that's just like, it's unusable. And a lot of this stuff, the archives, I may have talked to you about this, but, Iron Mountain has a facility that they do for some of the labels where they've got stuff, and there's just shelves and shelves, and there's people that just go through the shelves and find stuff. Like, they don't even realize it's there.
It's probably not even...
And they open a box and go...
But it's probably not even written on.
Yeah. So they open it up and then they find out, like, oh, crap. This is such and such. You know, and it might, or it might be labeled wrong, or there might be something on the front end that is there, but then they realize the whole rest of it is, like, this other thing that's been missing. And so, yeah, there's... You have all kinds of crap like that. And that's getting more... There's more... I don't call it focus, but there's more attention on that now because
money. You make money off it.
Well, trying to reissue cataloging, money. Giving a hook to do that and have people like me buy them.
Of course.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
Play it again and again and again.
Yeah.
So the other quick thing you brought, I'm going down a tangent here now. How do you feel about Iommi is going to the next set of re-releases are Fused and the DEP sessions with Glenn Hughes, not Born Again. I thought Born Again was going to be the next thing.
Well, I think Born Again sits in some weird contractual thing too, which is why it didn't happen with anything else that he's done yet.
I'd love to hear that remix, but I am excited to hear, I have Fused and I have the DEP sessions, right? So for anyone who doesn't know, the DEP sessions was something he recorded like in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And it got shelled when he went back with Sabbath.
Yep.
And there was 8 tracks on it. And I believe the original ones had, I think Dave Holland might have been on drums.
Wow.
And they re-recorded the drums. I think it might have been Kenny Aronoff. So there's 8 tracks there. There was one song on it called Gone that ended up on a Glenn Hughes solo album. I think it was Return of Crystal Karma, I think in the late 90s. Mm. And I remember hearing that, and it was like Hughes and Iommi. And I'm like, where the fuck did that song come from? So there's that. And then Fused was the record he released, I think, in the mid-2000s. And I think the label that they were on folded more or less after the album came out. They never toured. And it was one of these albums that I think has been out of print for a while. Mm. And it's a fantastic record.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are good selections to do. I mean, I was happy about the Tony Martin ones.
Yeah.
And it was good that he, you know, kind of went back through them as well. And that was great. And yeah, I think there's something in the back of my head tells me there's something else that's like a contractual, like, bullshit along with Born Again that's prevented any of that work. Because
I've heard him talk about the masters that they've been found.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a money thing. You're probably right. Plus the fact that you've all of a sudden now you've got Ian Gillan in the mix.
Yeah.
So there's that aspect of it as well. You got to deal probably with his management.
Right.
Maybe. And
managers always come into it, right? Managers and lawyers, because Iommi and Ian, they're buddies. They're still buddies.
Yeah.
You know, even though everything else that went down and shit like that, they're still friends.
And on that album was Bill Ward.
Yeah.
And Geezer.
Yeah.
So I think Tony has said that it was difficult at times to get the Tony Martin box set out because of all the players that were on it.
Yeah.
That there was different musicians on different records. And sometimes I think he said during the process that it'd be going great, and then all of a sudden something had happened and it'll never fucking come out.
Yeah.
And then it'd be going great, and then something else had happened and it'll never be coming out. That, you know, you have to deal with all these different players, and you know, it depends which way the wind is blowing with some of them. Some days they might be great with it, and then others is like, I want an extra fucking 40 grand or something, you know. But
yeah, I mean, it would be, I would love if they did Born Again in one of those super deluxe sets, like
just
they've been doing with
it.
Some of the others, you know.
But
you got to remember too, they could. There's one thing if you find the masters, because the masters are the mastered product. I mean, I've got the masters for that Mr. Big album.
Yeah,
right. But that's not the actual tapes. So you've mastered those down. But with Born Again, they need to get back to the source tapes.
No, I believe Iommi says they've found them.
Okay, because that's what got fucked up. Because originally the sound sounded great.
Yeah.
It was when it went and got mastered, that it came back with what the fuck happened. So that's what they need to get back to, is those original source tapes.
Because I've heard Forbidden. I've heard the original Forbidden. I think there's a marked difference between, and there's some people love the original and good for you.
Yeah.
I think what they did with the remix version is much better.
Yeah.
Right? If they did that to Born Again,
yeah,
it'd be like a new fucking album.
Yeah.
Because Ian Gillan has said for years that he hates the mix on it.
Yeah.
I think the songs are there.
Uh-huh.
I think the performances are there. And in some ways, I think I love that album in spite of the fucking way it sounds.
Yeah.
You know, I'll actually listen to it and I'll put on Trash and say, this sounds like shit, but fuck it, it's a fucking great record.
It is. And they had fun making it, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to have that much camaraderie, that much fun, and then put out bad music. It's just...
Yeah. Well, it's bad sounding.
You know what I mean? That's what I mean. I think everything sounded really good there.
But people... Some people love the sound of that album.
Yeah, I mean, I love the album. Do I wish it sounded better? Yeah. Do I wish it had a better cover? Sorry, Crusher. Yeah.
I can live with the cover. It's the way it sounds to me. You know, but we'll see what happens. We talked about the Sabbath thing before with the Tony Martin box set. I love that Iommi's actually bothering to do this.
Yeah, I think that's good. He's like, okay, they did their stuff, and now he's got this time to really like focus and be passionate about going back through his legacy and trying to make it better.
He's been doing it for the last couple of years, and Jimmy Page has been doing it for
the
last
40
years.
And the thing is, you got to think about it, right? With the managers they had and all of that other crap that went on, the quality did suffer. There was a lot of just push it out. Let's go push it out. Just push it out, right? And so he's. I think he has a good thing of going, you know what? There's things that I think I should be proud of, and I need to present them in a way that I can be proud of them, and not and get rid of the things I was dissatisfied by. You know, make things right. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what else he did. I was enthused about the Tony Martin stuff.
I'm wondering. And this is a little bit off the wall here. I wonder, will he do the same with The Devil You Know? I wonder, is there any unreleased Dio stuff? But that might be a serious issue getting that out.
Yeah.
Because there's 10 songs on that record. There might be one on the Japanese release and a bonus maybe.
I'd love to hear more of that.
Yeah, or Dehumanizer.
Yeah.
Because with the Tony Martin box set, it skipped Dehumanizer because it was Ronnie. But I know on YouTube that there's stuff from the Dehumanizer sessions out there that weren't on the record.
Yeah.
It's similar to me, like, you know, the songs from Coverdale Page that are on YouTube that never got the deluxe treatment as well. So I wonder, will Tony do that in the future? I hope he does.
Right.
Because Dehumanizer is another record where people listen to it and they go, not mad into the sound of that.
Yeah.
But they had Mac producing it. But I think that's a fabulous album as well. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. We're just going to have to see. Focus! But getting back to what we talked about way at the beginning, like half an hour ago. Yeah, so you sat down a few weeks ago with Drew Cagle.
Mm-hmm.
And like we talked about, I mean, I think great up-and-coming guy. Anything else you want to say about Drew before we roll this interview?
I really enjoyed talking to him. Young guy. I can have a bit of trepidation interviewing young guys.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a good one.
Yeah.
He's coming from the right place. And, you know, the song I heard is good. And if you're 23 now and you're getting into the music business,
yeah,
and you're as clued in as this guy, you know, I hope he does well.
Yeah. I, you know, back when I was doing a lot more of the interviews, those were always the hardest ones, were more of these lesser known, up and coming younger folks, where I had a few where they were very difficult interviews, trying to figure out like how to connect with this person. And it just, yeah, and after you do one of those and the next one like that, you just kind of have this, oh, fuck, like, is this going to be another one that goes like this? And yeah, I had a few that were difficult, and I had others like yours that were fantastic. And yeah, his was definitely, it was a super easy edit. Always seemed to be very thoughtful with what he talked about as well. So yeah, why don't we roll it?
Appreciative.
Yeah, he was. He actually was. That's
the one word I'll say about him. He's appreciative.
Not only of the attention that you were giving him, but also he was appreciative of everybody that he's come in contact with in his career.
Yes.
Being able to remember, because you asked him about advice given and stuff.
Yes, I did.
And he was able to be like, cite several things.
Yeah, he did.
And say, I appreciated this because of this part of the context. This because of this. This because of this. So, yeah. Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, just a good guy.
Yep. All right, let's roll it.
Hey, man, what's up?
Hey, that Drew?
Yeah, what's up, man?
Hey, it's Richie. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
I'm okay. So when you say you do music for a living, describe that to me, like, because I know you got the band, but what else do you do besides that in the music business?
I do a lot of writing and stuff like that. I do some fill-in work as well, but I'm you know, most of the stuff I do is for this band, and I just keep costs low and you know, just run it like a business.
Okay, that must be difficult now, the way the music business is.
Yeah, for sure. You know,
because I'm looking at your website, and you know, you released an EP a couple of years ago, in 2021,
yeah.
And that would have been around the time where, you know, people were still thinking COVID. And you had the effects of that on venues and you know, the like, and you know, you're in a band and you're trying to find a place to play, and you would have to deal with that, and then you just have the way the business model is set up now. So, you know, kudos to you for doing that, but it must be incredibly difficult at times.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, especially during COVID, I mean, that was difficult for everyone.
Yeah, so you're in the Midwest, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, I live in Illinois, but I do a lot of my work down in Nashville at this point, too.
Okay, so in the Midwest where you are, in Illinois,
yeah.
What impact did COVID have on the venues out there? Because I'm just outside of Boston, and there's a lot of venues had a lot of issues, and a lot of them closed down because of it.
Oh, I mean, I think that was everywhere, you know. I live in central Illinois, so not really up near Chicago or anything like that. So the amount of venues that really were doing stuff beforehand weren't exactly booming either at that time, you know.
Yeah.
But once COVID hit, for sure, everything shut down. Some venues unfortunately had to close, but with that, you know, things evolved and new venues opened, and you know, people bought the old venues, and things grow, and now there's honestly, the music scene in central Illinois is better than I've ever seen it beforehand. So
wow, really. And everybody is touring these days. Everybody.
Yeah, you have to. You know, when you have three years off or 2 years off, no money coming in, you gotta hit the road.
That must be tough for you as well, because everybody's out there. There's more competition.
I don't really. We're lucky enough that, you know, when it comes to the more people touring, is the more people that want us on their bill.
Okay.
We're in a spot where we're kind of like one of the go-to rock opening bands in the Midwest. So if there's a bunch of different rock tours, you know, bigger named acts or bands like that, we've had the busiest schedule we've ever had, you know, in the last few years because of stuff like that. When everyone's coming out, everyone's hitting the tour route, and everyone needs someone to open up for them, and we're the kind of band that's like, you say the word and we'll show up. So
So what's the furthest you've gone to play a show?
I played in Texas. We played in Denver, Colorado a few weeks ago on this tour right now. So it'd be one of those two. Okay. From Illinois.
Okay. Drive down, obviously, or do you fly?
We drove. It's a lot of extra work to try to get guitars and drums and planes, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So I was looking at the list of bands that you played with, and I'm big into the 80s rock stuff. And
me too.
Yeah. And you played with a lot of those bands, like Great White was one, I think Mr. Big was another one. How much interaction do you actually get with those guys? Are you just playing the one night with them and then they're off to play somewhere else?
Well, every show is different and every band are different because they're different people. But, you know, for example, Mr. Big, we played with them on the beginning of this All Figured Out tour that we're on right now. And they could not have been cooler. We played with them at District 142 up in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And we opened up to them, did about a 30-minute opening set. It was just two of us. And great crowds, great night. And, you know, we met them in passing a little bit beforehand. We talked a little bit. And then after the show, you know, after everyone had left, you know, we were all out there sitting on the stage just hanging out and talking and having a couple beers. And, you know, there was Eric Martin came over and was hanging out with us, and Billy Sheehan and Paul Gilbert were telling funny tour stories, and those guys could not have been more cool and down to earth and giving advice to young rockers trying to, you know, get the same thing as our heroes. So they were some of the best. We did three shows with Stryper a few weeks ago as well.
That awesome. One,
yeah, they were great. Michael Sweet's the best, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we did three shows with them, so that was a little bit more, like, personable, you know. One show is kind of hard to fully connect with somebody, but when you're multiple nights in a row and your music mixes so well together and you're moving people together and doing what you love, then you create a bond faster that way. So the three shows with Stryper was super cool. They let us go on their tour bus, and once we finished the last show, I think the venue had already closed and everyone had already left, and we were all still outside hanging out by the tour bus, and Stryper showed us their whole new record before it even came out. I think they're getting ready to release it now, or they just did release it, but they hung out and showed us the whole new record, and it was awesome, and just another group of just couldn't be nicer guys.
That must be great for you when something like that happens, because you've heard the phrase, I'm sure, over the years, never meet your heroes. And when you actually get to meet some of these guys, they're actually, you know, human beings, down to earth, willing to offer advice and everything. That, I think, for a musician, something like that must, you know, boost your confidence a little bit, that you must be doing something right to keep going in the path you're going.
Well, you know, they're not all like that.
Well, I know that, fair. But I'm trying to be nice.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it's awesome. It's awesome when they understand that, when they make you feel like you're part of the team for being a part of the show. You know, that's the fun part, when everyone understands all we do is we play music. So let's play music great and give people a great experience. And when they look at you like, tonight we did that together, that's always the best feeling. Anyone that knows me knows I've never had a shortness of confidence. So that's not a necessary thing, but that, you know, I need to boost my confidence or anything like that. I probably don't need any more. But it is always good to, you know, have someone that you look up to tell you, you know, you guys don't suck. And, you know, it's always great to see some of those older bands that, you know, they that we get a lot of the time. We get the jokes that they say whenever you guys blow up, let us open for you next time. So it's always funny and cool when people say it like that, and you're like, I mean, you guys are my heroes. I would never do that, but if I ever was in a fortunate enough place, we obviously would, you know.
Drew, what's the best bit of advice one of these musicians has given you?
Ooh, that's a great question. You know, I've gotten a bunch of great advice over the years from so many cool rock stars. I'll give you a few different ones because I can't. There's no top one, I don't think. Jim Peterick from Survivor one time told me, right when I was first getting started, I mean, I don't even think I had formed Drew Cagle and the Reputation yet. And he just pretty much said, you know, I saw one of his shows and I said, hey, man, I'd love to do this one day. Your music has, you know, impacted my life a bunch. And I said, what would you give advice to someone just starting? And he was like, people are always going to tell you you suck and that your vision is wrong and nobody's going to want to hear it when you first start. And he said, when you first get that initial thing, ignore it or use it as motivation, and don't ever let another person's words affect what you think your vision should do for somebody. And man, that propelled me through the first 5 years of my career, at least.
Wow.
Because he wasn't wrong. He nailed it immediately. You know, when I first got started, it was a long time before anyone ever said, I like your music. You know, it was always people like, who the hell is this guy down the street trying to play music? He ain't any cooler, smarter, or, you know, better than I am. And then, you know, when you get faced with that, you choose whether or not to let it affect you and you quit, or you say, you know what, I'm gonna dig and work harder and show prove these people wrong and give the people that actually want to hear this, you know, something special. That was one great piece of advice. And another great piece of advice I got was actually a little bit more recently when we played with Living Color. We played with them at the Castle Theater, and we'd hung out a little bit that night. They had absolutely had a killer performance, and we were taking pictures by their bus with some fans. And before they left, I stopped them as they were getting up on the bus, and I said, "Hey, man, you know, kind of the same thing. So, you got any advice for, you know, someone that's getting ready to go out and do it? Because of, you know, how long their career has been, how successful they've been." And he was like, I can't remember which member said it. I think they all pretty much were standing there saying the same thing. But the phrase that I heard that stuck to me was, you can't ever hit a home run if you're not at bat, is what he said. And then he said, and you can't ever get to the plate if you're not in the stadium. So that was pretty much the thing of, you know, if you don't take risks, you don't get the reward. You know, you can't ever make it in this business if you're not trying. And that's kind of what's I've been using recently to push me forward as I am now, just because, you know, once you're in this thing for a long period of time, you know, 10 years or so, it's easy to get jaded in any sort of job like that, or pursuing a dream or a passion or something, and realizing, you know, if a song doesn't, you know, blow up like you think it will, you know, where do you go from there?
Mm.
So, go ahead.
So, Drew, what's your definition of success then?
I'd say my, you know, it changes for everybody, but for me to feel like I've found success in music and in this, all it really takes, like I believe I've already found success. To me, all I really care about is that a song that I write moves somebody and helps them and provides them with an escape from their everyday problems, and potentially, if the song's good enough, takes them into a new reality for 3 minutes and 30 seconds or however long the song it is. You know, that's what I care about, because that's what my favorite songs and my favorite artists did for me. So if I can provide someone with an escape, or someone can come tell me that my song helped them through a hard time, or has moved them, or has given them some sort of memory that they cherish, because that's success to me. And it doesn't matter how many people it is, if it's one or 1 million. Like, if I can give people a good memory that they cherish, then that's success to me, because I feel like memories are the most valuable currency we have.
Mm. So, going back to when you were young, what were the albums that really did it for you? I'm trying to get I don't know how old you are, Drew, but I'm trying to get a handle on where your sound comes from. Did it come from... What albums it came from? Did it come from your parents' record collection? Was it radio, MTV?
Yeah, so I'm 23. I've always been kind of a student of the game when it comes to music. So if I get any music recommendations, I always listen to it, and I see if there's anything from every song I can listen to that could possibly influence me in some way. With that being said, the main ones that obviously kickstarted into the sound everyone hears now, from more of my like formative years. Obviously, Appetite for Destruction was a massive one, as I'm sure it was with most rockers. Highway to Hell was a big one for me too, when it came to the rock and stuff. Madman Across the Water by Elton John, and Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. Both those records were huge for me. The Stranger by Billy Joel. I was really into all the songwriter stuff, you know, like John Mellencamp and stuff like that. But whenever I heard the songs that really pushed the limit a little bit more and made you feel that danger and aggression, like I said, like Highway to Hell and Appetite and stuff like that, Slippery When Wet from Bon Jovi, like those all kind of went together to form stuff for me. But I was also listening to a lot of new modern stuff, like the Struts and the Glorious Sons and Rival Sons and the Revivalists and Matt Mason and a bunch of other modern artists and singer-songwriter artists and stuff like that. And I listen to everything, man. You know.
But where are you getting the introduction to Elton John? And I know Appetite's all over the radio, but was there someone in your family had all that stuff, or was it just through osmosis through the radio?
No, it was my dad. He was in a band in the 90s, so before I was born, he was in a band, and he ended up pretty much stopping that to, you know, take care of me and my brother and stuff when we were born. And he was always a big rocker, and he actually wrote he helped me write a lot when I first got started on our first record. He helped play guitar on two of the songs and write them with me when I just didn't know how to play any instruments yet. So I had the words and had the melody, but I just couldn't figure out how to put it down yet, and he helped me write that stuff. So he very much exposed me to a bunch of the rockers and stuff like that. And he was a huge concert goer too. He'd seen all those bands that we had said, and, you know, and he introduced me to the Stones, and he took me to go see the Stones in 2016 or 2017. And that was a change my life kind of moment. And he took me to my first ever concert, which was Lynyrd Skynyrd, which was great. And I actually ended up playing with Artemis Pyle, the original drummer for Lynyrd Skynyrd, who played on all those records in May of this year. And we got to meet him too, and speaking of cool people to meet, he's absolutely, you know, top three or maybe even top one of the coolest rock stars I've ever met.
So speaking of first concerts, so my first concert in 87 or 88 was Bon Jovi, and Lita Ford opened, right?
Oh.
And my son is now 14. When he was 9, his first concert I brought him to see was Lita Ford.
Oh, that's great.
Now, I think you've played with Lita, haven't you?
Yes, we have. We did play with Lita.
Yeah, did you get a chance to talk to her a lot?
That was a fun day. It was in October, I think, in 2022 or 21, and it was a rescheduled show because it just didn't work or whatever on the routes or something the first time around. It was supposed to be a summer show, so it was outdoors at a baseball stadium, and it was, I mean, it was like 25 degrees outside. there was like heaters everywhere. It was a cold day. I was wearing a hoodie, a leather jacket on top of that, and then a big coat on top of that, and I was still freezing. And she was doing the same. She had a coat and a leather jacket on. She plays guitar, so she had like fingerless gloves on, and it was a miserable day for everybody.
She almost go
I
on.
Would say. I did get to meet her a little bit that day, but it wasn't, I don't think anyone was in a sit down talk type of situation. She was very cool with me and stuff. She had just got done with sound check, and everyone was understanding the day that it was about to be for everybody. And you know, she walked by or whatever, and I said, you know, hi Lita, thanks for having us on the show. It's, you know, dream come true to be able to play with you, or it's an honor to play with you or something. And she shook my hand, said thank you or whatever, and ran into the dressing room where there was heat.
Hey, this is Lita Ford. You are listening to Focus on Metal.
So as someone, Drew, with, you know, your background in music, you're young, but you've absorbed all this old music and new music. I'm going to pick your brain now.
Yeah, man.
What is the perfect song for you? What's your favorite song? What do you look? You look at a song and you go, that's it.
Wow, what a great question. You know what? I do this thing that whenever I get to some of my favorite songs, I think everyone does this, where you create, like, you know, like there's a top 10, but you never know which what numbers they're at. Mm. You know what I mean? And but the one for me that no matter what I'm feeling, what day it is, what the weather is outside, this, like, every time I hear the song that I think it's just absolutely incredible is End of Innocence by Don Henley.
That's a great song.
That song, I think, absolutely, it gives you everything that there should be in a song. I mean, it's, the lyrics are from the heart, the musicianship is incredible, the, you know, it's soulful, you feel it, you can feel what he's talking about. He's talking about real stuff. Like, that song's a big one that does that for me. The Pretender by Jackson Browne is another one kind of like that. That's just, you know, it's not really overproduced or anything special. It's just a songwriter singing from the heart. Those are the songs that are, you know, the greatest songs are that. They're the song. I don't really care too much about the overflashiness of a shreddy guitar solo or screaming vocals or anything like that. You know, when you strip it down to acoustic or you strip it down to the most bare bones of a song, and if you can move somebody with that, then that's a great song.
Mm. So, Drew, tell me what you're up to now. Are you recording more singles or an album?
So All Figured Out, our brand new single, just came out. We're touring it right now. I think that ends in the end of August or whatever, or right before September starts. And we've been on the road we're about halfway through it now. We started in June. I recorded All Figured Out in a session in Nashville with a bunch of session guys down there, and the producer from the Eagles was running the point for us on it. And we recorded All Figured Out and 7 other songs in one day. And so there's a full record with the themes of All Figured Out and the same sound and feeling of that new single. So you can expect that coming in the future. That's already finished and in the can. It's just a matter of when's the right time to show the next part of the story to people.
Do you have a label for that, or are you going to release it yourself?
I have my own independent label that I've released all my stuff on.
Okay.
Reputation Records.
So, excellent. I didn't really know who you were until Jody got in contact with me. I really do like the song.
Thank you.
What I like is, and I only found out now how old you are, I really like that someone as young as you produces music like this. And now I know where it's coming from, that you're coming from the era that I grew up in when it came to songwriting and sounds and things like that. And it seems that you're absorbing it all in the right way. You know,
I'm
giving you a compliment. I certainly get that from you, that you know what you want to do, but you're learning as you go. And I think it's definitely going to work out for you.
Oh, well, thank you, man. Yeah.
You know?
I think in every venture in life, you know, if you learn as you go,
you'll
find success.
Yeah. Well, anyone who gets into the music business as young as you and wants to stay in it, I'll help you promote it your stuff as best you can. Because I've been doing this show 13 years, and I do it as a hobby, and I know how hard it is for people to do stuff full-time when it comes to the music business. So, you know, kudos to you.
Oh, well, thank you, man.
You know, so do you want to give out the social media sites where people can get in touch with you?
Yeah, sure. Drew Kegel and the Reputation on Facebook. You can find it on all the other social medias too. It's Instagram is Drew_Kegel_TR.
Okay.
So, you can find our new music video on YouTube under Drew Kegel and the Reputation. You should definitely check it out. It is awesome. We did some top quality stuff, recorded in St. Louis with JT Ibanez, who does a bunch of killer music videos for, like, you know, Creed and Alter Bridge and just, you know, every big rock artist you can imagine, he's done something with them. So
nice.
It was super cool to do that and have a great video on top of a, you know, great actual mixed and recorded and produced song down in Nashville with all those guys. So if you like the song, definitely check out the video. It's super cool.
Okay. Well, Drew, it's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, man.
All right.
Nice talking to you.
And have a good rest of the day, and thanks for rescheduling this so I could do it a little bit later with you.
Yeah, no problem, man.
All right.
Have a good one.
Take care. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Right, there you go. Richie's chat with Drew Kegel, and you know, be sure to check out all of the social media links that Drew mentioned, and head up to YouTube, check out the video for the latest single as well. And you know, best of luck to that dude. I think he's got a great future. It's very cool to have him on Focus on Metal early on in his career. So I think what's probably coming up next on the next episode will be a chat that Richie did with Michael Gilbert of Flotsam and Jetsam. They've got new music in the works. They've got the single out now. And I believe that we'll be having a chat with Michael the next time that we chat with you. But for this week, that's it. There ain't no more. Stick a fork in it. This puppy is done. So for Richie, myself, and everybody else here at Focus on Metal, have yourselves a great metal week. And until we talk to you again next time, thanks for listening. And as always, remember,
Focus on Metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.